Welcome to this Friday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's episode, Taylor Charleston will have a report about proper protocols for soil health sampling and testing, including the best times to do so. In addition, we'll have a report getting another look at speaker topics for next month's Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia. And I'll have a look at regional and national ag news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
The California Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross joined U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland in the Central Valley for discussions about California's ongoing drought, as well as farmers and ranchers who are part of the solution with adaptation and conservation, including more than 1,100 projects funded through the CDFA State Water Efficiency and Enhancement Program, or SWEEP. Those projects will save an estimated 1.5 million acre feet of water over a 10-year period, or 47 billion gallons. Secretary Haaland's visit was organized by Congressman Jim Costa of Fresno, who provided state officials, water managers, and farmers with an opportunity to meet with Haaland and Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Camille Touton. The visit comes less than a week after Governor Newsom introduced the state's water strategy for a hotter, drier California, which is tied to $8 billion over the last 2 years to help store, recycle, desalt, and conserve the water that the state will need to keep up with the increasing pace of climate change. Without action now, extreme weather could diminish California's water supply by up to 10% by the year 2040. Secretary Ross says that they have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to invest in state drought funding and hundreds of millions from the federal government to build reliable and climate-resilient water systems. She said it is gratifying to be able to share the urgency of the situation with Secretary Haaland and to stress that they can move forward faster by working together to strengthen existing partnerships. Thanks to research at the University of California, Davis, strawberry losses from Fusarium wilt could be greatly reduced. Researchers say they have discovered genes that are resistant to the deadly soil-borne disease. The problem started with a fumigant used to protect soil from the disease, methyl bromide, which became illegal. In the late 1980s, the Environmental Protection Agency and others determined that methyl bromide had negative impacts on the ozone layer. In 2015, UC Davis researchers Steve Knapp and Glenn Cole started focusing on Fusarium wilt.
That was a major focus for our breeding program, was to start going after identifying disease resistance and then trying to develop tools to help breed more quickly the inclusion of disease resistance into the cultivars that are produced.
Cole says they found that a single chromosome provided disease resistance. They identified that chromosome and created a genetic tool which they used to speed up the breeding for resistance to Fusarium. As a result, all of the strawberry selections that came through their program are resistant to the Fusarium wilt. Cole says growers will also need to divert from the practice of using the same ground year after year for their strawberry crops.
It's become clearly evident that the use of rotations and cover crops is going to become more important.
Knapp and Cole have informed the industry about current strawberry varieties that have the resistance so growers can select plants with that added protection. Cole noted the new resistant varieties coming out later this year will be suitable for several growing seasons. While demand for grapes feels similar to last year at this time, export demand feels particularly good. Jared Lane of Grapeman Farm says he feels like they have more export demand than last year, which is encouraging. He said export demand completely fell during COVID-19, and now it feels like they have a little bit more. Following last year's logistics issues, has shipping overseas gotten any easier? They've added more boats, and there's more room on the boats, but they're just not as frequent. So maybe not available every week, but every 3 weeks, which is a little challenging, according to Lane. Interestingly, consumer trends are also developing within domestic demand. He says with inflation, people need more money, and things they would cut out are luxury items. They buy whatever fruit is on sale. It's becoming more and more that fruit moves when it's on sale and is very stagnant when it's off sale. That said, this year's crop of grapes from California looks robust through the first of the year, with some varieties setting slightly heavier than others. A lot of older varieties were taken out due to low productivity, according to Lane, who notes that the newer, younger fields are more heavy set. Grapeman Farms has some new high-flavor varieties that are producing well, including Red Grape Jack Salutes and Great Green, a mid-season green grape. Harvest is well underway and ramping up throughout the next 2 to 3 weeks, when peak supplies are anticipated to arrive and stay at those peak levels until October. Stone fruit is starting to finish, as are other crops, so they're hoping they can get a good push for the next couple of months. Then he says they'll go into the storage program in November and December. HMC Farms has partnered with Tavel Aerobotics Technologies to pilot their drone harvesting system utilizing flying autonomous robots. Each robot has the ability to fly, locate fruit, harvest, and place the fruit all on its own with no human interaction required. HMC Farms has a reputation for pursuing cutting-edge ag technology. Drew Kettleson, vice president and a farm manager, has a background in civil engineering, which gives him a unique perspective on farming and technology. He and John McClarty, president of HMC Farms, and Drew's brother-in-law, work together to stay updated on the latest developments and test various forms of ag technology in order to determine the best fit for their farms. Kettleson attributes HMC's high-density stone fruit planting system with the ability to utilize drone harvesting. He says the years of work they put into cultivating high-density orchards are paying off as they implement technology like flying autonomous robot harvesting. They have successfully harvested peaches, nectarines, and multiple colors of plums using drones this summer. The project is still in an early stage, but the future potential is very exciting, according to Kettleson. Autonomous harvest options have great potential to fill a crucial need in the agricultural community, which has notoriously dealt with labor shortages over the years. In places like California's Central Valley, this technology may also help with harvest during periods of extreme heat, as summer temperatures can often reach well above 100 degrees for many days in a row, right at the peak of stone fruit harvest. A former member of the House Agriculture Committee is facing fraud charges. The Department of Justice this week released a 28-count indictment against T.J. Cox, a California Democrat who represented California's 21st District between 2019 and 2021. According to the indictment, Cox perpetuated multiple fraud schemes targeting companies he was affiliated with and her clients and vendors. Cox created unauthorized off-the-books bank accounts and diverted client and company money into those accounts through false representation. From 2013 to 2018, Cox obtained over $1.7 million in diverted client payments and company loans and investments across two different fraud schemes. According to allegations in the indictment, when Cox was a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 2018 election, he perpetuated a scheme to fund and reimburse family members and associates for donations to his campaign. During his time on the Agriculture Committee, Cox sat on the Livestock and Foreign Agriculture Subcommittee, along with the Biotechnology, Horticulture, and Research Subcommittee.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Information now on proper protocols for soil health sampling and testing with this feature report from Taylor Charlstrom.
Sampling for soil health is pertinent for knowing how your soil biology is holding up, getting an idea of beneficial bacteria and fungi levels, and whether or not they need assistance. But one thing that needs to be considered when conducting a soil health sample test is timing, according to Helier Director of Ag Science, Cassidy Million. A properly timed soil sample will give the most accurate representation of a field or orchard's soil health status, and if improperly timed, a grower might not know if their soil health is in a deficit.
Soil sampling should occur during a time of year that is most reflective of a typical operation conditions. So this timing is going to change based on your geographical location, your growing season, as well as your operation. But a good rule of thumb is to avoid sampling shortly after a soil disturbance or extreme heat or moisture conditions, because all of these factors will have some sort of impact on your soil microbiome. So, another factor to think of when we're going to soil test is depending on which soil test you're going to select based on the inputs you're going to do or the goals of your operations. So these factors will ultimately help you decide when and how you should soil sample and how often that soil sampling should be completed. So for an example, in the Midwest with row crops, the optimum time to soil sample is usually in the spring or the fall. So in the spring before pre-plant, leaving enough time to make adjustments to those management practices, or in the fall post-harvest. And the key is to get the most representative sample of the field as possible and to be as consistent as possible when sampling. So consistency in sampling timings from year to year, and both the time you're sampling and the conditions, will help you understand how your soil is changing, how those soil microbes are changing. So this will help you compare more of an apples to apples instead of oranges to oranges, so to speak. So we're able to compare samples and draw conclusions from one year to the next. But another factor to think about is frequency of soil sampling. So depending on a few factors, so if you're planning to change your management practices, it's good to sample before the management practices change, and also an appropriate time after, so we can see what changes were made. And the amount of time will depend on which management practice you're changing or the product inputting you're putting in. So this is a great time to contact your retailer if you're putting a new product down, or an agronomist or CCA to help you understand and plan when is the best time to soil sample after that change is made. And then on the point of where to soil sample, so again, this has a lot to do with your field size and variability. So the number of soil samples you're going to take is going to be dependent on your farm size. In general, for these types of tests, it's recommended to do a 6-inch soil depth and avoid incorporation of any plant debris. But again, depending on what test you're selecting, these parameters can also change. In a uniform field, you would take samples in a random locations across the field. So this usually would follow a zigzag, an M or W shaped pattern. But you also need to make sure you're avoiding any irregular areas in the field. So a low spot where water is pooling, borders of a field, et cetera. But however, if you know there is a spot in your field that you're always getting lower production and it's consistently underperforming from other parts of the field, I would suggest to target that area alone, keep that soil sample different from the rest of the field. And this will help you glean some insights on why that area might be underperforming. So in summary of that, when, where, how to soil sample will not only vary with your geographical location and the growing season, but also it's going to have an impact on what soil tests you're going to run.
After samples for soil health are submitted to a laboratory that tests for the soil's biology, a grower will receive back a list of metrics, sometimes percentages, and sometimes more specific metrics. It's important to understand the interpretations of these metrics, which the lab or a CCA can assist with, to properly address potential soil health needs.
Looking at actually measuring that alive portion of your soil, so measuring how we can look at which microbes are present or the abundance, there's a few different options. So we can do something called a carbon dioxide respiration test or a CO2 burst test. So what this actually measures is the activity of oxygen-using soil microbes, so this bacteria and fungi, as they release CO2 during their daily activities. So with this test, the higher the CO2 value, the more activity you're having. So this is indicative of having more microbes and fungi functioning in your soil at that time. However, with this type of test, this value, because it's measuring a daily activity, will change from day to day. So it's really important to make sure you're sampling at the correct time. There also are some other options that are not necessarily day-to-day change, but more of a weekly to a monthly changes you'll see in these tests. These include things like an ACE protein test, which will measure the protein-like substances in the soil. So the higher value, the more organically bound nitrogen that microbes can release for future plant uptake. With an active carbon test, or if you're doing this, requesting this test at a lab, it's called a POC-C test. This will measure the amount of material available to feed the microbes. So the higher the value, the more food available for those microbes to thrive on. Then you also have a PLFA test, and this measures the phospholipid fatty acids. So these acids are found in the membrane of active organisms. So this will indicate the amount of microbial biomass and proportions of both fungi and bacteria that are present in the soil. And then lastly, with some new technology coming out in previous years, we can actually do a DNA extraction of microbial communities within the soil. So this will actually quantify the abundance and the diversity of those microbes present in your soil. So this will tell you how many microbes are present and actually which ones are in those soil samples. But there's another aspect we can also look at, not just looking at directly those microbes, but also soil physical properties can be an indication of your soil biology. So you can do things like your water holding capacity test, And this measures how much water your soil can hold, and that can be influenced by your soil biology. And then also an aggregation test. And an aggregation test will measure the physical structure, and we know that that's strongly influenced by the soil biology. So with that test, your larger particle size, the better the soil. So I just gave you a lot of options there to test your soil microbes. But these soil biology tests are diverse, as I just told you. And depending on what parameter you're interested in measuring and also your patient's level to see that measurable change, that will depend on the best test to select for your operation.
As managing soil health has gained importance in the eyes of growers, growers are actually starting to test more often than they used to, putting themselves ahead of the curve.
As we're moving forward in the agriculture, we have growers that are striving now to go toward higher yielding practices and adapting new methods to improve that soil health. And they're adapting a more regular soil sample and testing procedure. So they're taking that more spoon feeding approach, I like to say, and incorporating a yearly soil test, sometimes multiple times a year, and also adding tissue sampling into their practices to help them reach those goals. And so I think not only in including those chemical tests, but adding in that biological component is really important when we're thinking about doing those tests as well.
I'm Taylor Charlstrom. You're listening to My Ag Life.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com. Learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In national agricultural news headlines, biofuel groups are welcoming signage of the Inflation Adjustment Act this week. The sweeping legislation includes key priorities for the biofuels industry. The legislation signed by the president earlier in the week includes an extension for tax credits for carbon dioxide sequestration and utilization, the clean fuel production credit starting in 2025 and expiring at the end of 2027 to produce low carbon fuels, and five tiers of sustainable aviation fuel credits. Additionally, the legislation includes $500 million for biofuels infrastructure through the end of 2031, an extension of the biomass-based diesel blenders credit, and a $300 million grant program to increase domestic production and deployment of sustainable aviation fuel. Renewable Fuels Association President and CEO Jeff Cooper says this bill puts ethanol on a sustainable path for growth and investment. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score says biofuels are critical to meeting climate goals, and this law will help to maximize the industry's contributions to a cleaner future. China continues to be the top ag trading partner for the U.S. despite new tensions over Taiwan, but an American Farm Bureau Federation official says the future is uncertain. AFBF trade advisor Dave Samuelson says that China's importance as a U.S. ag trading partner cannot be understated.
We were at about $33 billion in ag exports to China last year, obviously our number one destination.
But Samuelson says U.S. strategic concerns over China's threats to Taiwan could push the White House closer to a trade deal with Taipei.
Depending on how things develop over the next several months may drive that. Maybe that would be the first one.
Breaking President Biden's anti-free trade deal policy. But so far, the White House plans only framework talks with Taiwan, which it excluded from its Indo-Pacific economic framework talks.
So I think what's going on with Taiwan fits a piece of what they've been proposing everywhere on trade. So there's really nothing different there yet. It may turn into something else, but I don't see it yet.
In the meantime, talks continue with China.
The phase one commitments on standards, those continue. There has been dialogue. There still needs to be more work there. We want that to continue. And, of course, we have the tariff issues that were put on. China has waived a lot of the tariffs in order to keep the trade going, help us rebound, but they still exist.
As do U.S. tariffs on PRC goods that American Farm Bureau Federation and others are pushing to remove. And while Samuelson says AFBF hopes for continued strong ag trade and even growth with China, strong external pressures now complicate that relationship. Average retail fertilizer prices tracked by DTN continue to move lower in the second week of August. All eight of the major fertilizers are now lower compared to a month ago. In addition, half of the fertilizers are now down a considerable amount, which DTN designates as anything 5% or more. Urea was 6% lower compared to last month. The nitrogen fertilizer had an average price of $812 a ton, and hydrous was down 6% from last month and had an average price of $1,365 a ton. Both DAP and UAN 28 were 5% less expensive compared to a month ago. DAP had an average price of $982 a ton, while UAN 28 was at $578 a ton. Rural Investment to Protect Our Environment, or RIPE, is applauding the inclusion of $20 billion for climate-smart agricultural practices in the Inflation Reduction Act. However, RIPE is urging lawmakers to shift funds away from the cost-share model in favor of payments that provide producers with a reasonable return for conservation. RIPE Executive Director Aliza Drews says they believe that the new funds intended for climate-smart agriculture should not set payment levels to cover the full cost of practice implementation. While the IRA offers significant funding, the group claims that most producers will not seek to use them because the payment terms are limited to cost share requirements. RIPE is a producer-led nonprofit advancing a unique climate policy plan for farmers and the public and advocates for the implementation of the RIPE 100 policy. The policy would allow farmers and ranchers to earn payments that reflect the benefits they deliver with a price floor above implementation costs, economic risks, and future climate policy costs. The Inflation Reduction Act will inject a massive amount of resources into soil and water conservation programs. USA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the information.
The Inflation Reduction Act.
This is an historic piece of legislation in terms of the investment it's going to make in rural communities across the United States.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack on the line Wednesday with reporters from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, giving us a rundown of some of those investments. USDA's part of that bill is about $40 billion, almost half, targeted at soil and water conservation efforts.
This is going to help nearly 300,000 farms and ranches across the United States implement conservation strategies on approximately 125 million acres.
Vilsack said we've not seen an investment like this for conservation since the Dust Bowl of the 1930s, and he said for the most part,
this is funneling into existing programs that everybody knows very, very well.
Which he says means little or no delay in putting that conservation money to work, although he said USDA is going to have to go out and hire more staff to work with farmers on the ground to create conservation plans and practices and implement them. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
This is your weekly reminder that the Crop Consultant Conference is coming up at the end of September on the 28th and 29th, and registration is now open at progressivecrop.com. On this week's pre-conference segment coverage, Nutrien's Carl Wyant, who is also chair on Western Region CCA's Board of Directors, the conference's partner, provides a look at the talk he'll be giving at the conference as well as a panel he'll be moderating.
My first talk that I'll be giving pertains to water quality, and not irrigation water quality, which we hear a lot about at these conferences we have throughout the state. But this is how water quality relates to your spray programs, your weed management, your fungus management, your bacteria management, and of course, your pesticide management. The other talk's going to be a panel. And in this panel, we're going to attempt to have a good conversation about what surprises 2023 might bring in terms of water supply and fertilizer supply.
When thinking about water quality and making a pesticide spray application, this is where the job of a CCA and a PCA come together, and both are going to want to hear about it.
One piece that I've learned in my agronomy career is that, you know, you've scouted for the pests, you've written or made that recommendation, or you're following the recommendation, you've read through all the fine print on that label, and you make your tank mix. The one piece where folks still have some room to improve that process is understanding what's in that water they're mixing all their different chemistries into. And what I'll go through the talk is why a water sample is so important for predicting how the actual chemical and physical characteristics of that spray water could have a negative impact on your control programs.
To put this into perspective, variable water quality can influence the effectiveness of a glyphosate spray application, for example, according to Wyatt.
One thing we see with glyphosate is we know it likes to bind with other metal cations. So if your water is full of these metal cations, it's a property called water hardness. If you have high water hardness, you can actually put in metal cations into your tank mix, and it can interact with the glyphosate and bend that glyphosate into something that looks roughly like a stop sign, because it's now bonded with that metal cation. That stop sign doesn't work on the weeds that you're trying to kill. There's a whole number of different water parameters you can look at. Hardness is one that has a lot of those metal cations or minerals. Then there's also issues with pH, just how acidic or basic is the water. And we also have these spray waters that come out of the tap looking like chocolate milk almost. And that the stuff that's in there, that organic matter, the sediments, can also impact your spray program.
The panel Wyatt will be moderating is also one that PCAs, CCAs, and grower applicators are going to want to pay attention to.
I think what's going to happen in 2023 is going to be starting to kind of come to the forefront of folks' minds. 2022 has been tough. Lots of surprises have hit us from a pricing and supply standpoint. So on this panel, we're going to attempt to try to work through what do we think. I know it's end of September. What do we think is going to happen in 2023 so folks can start thinking about those supply issues and from a water perspective and from a fertilizer perspective, and start making some plans now.
Register for the Crop Consultant Conference today at progressivecrop.com to hear these talks and more. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.